Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Hello, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. My name is Carl Carlson. I'm joined this morning by Fred Schenkelberg.
Hey, good morning, Carl.
Good morning, Fred. And we're ready to go here and talk about a subject about which I feel a great deal of passion, failure mode and effects analysis. That's the topic Fred and I are going to talk about this morning. The thing that I wanted to share and just have our fireside chat, so to speak, is what are some of the most common mistakes that are made in FMEA, and how can practitioners avoid those mistakes? So that's a topic that I'd love to chat with you about, Fred.
That sounds good. Well, I feel at a little bit of a disadvantage because you wrote the book on FMEA. we'll put a plug for your book in here because okay. I don't think you're going to do it, so I'll have to do it for you.
All right, thank you. Well, it's interesting because, you know, if I go back in my career has been reliability engineering and management, but I have spent a good deal of time on FMEA, and I think between supervising teams of engineers that do FMEAs and my own individual contributions, I've participated or supervised a couple thousand FMEAs. And so I got to believe I've seen every possible way they've been done wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think I've made about every mistake possible early in my career. So one of my favorite topics is how can we avoid the most common mistakes? What are they and how can we avoid them?
Now, is this from like a facilitator role or as a participant or even in just the whole overall design, or does this break down into mistakes in all of those areas?
It really breaks down into all of those. So it's in facilitating, but it's also in the guidance with design for reliability with design teams and manufacturing teams on the process side. And it's also seeing and auditing FMEAs that people that work in my groups over the years have made. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of all of the above.
Well, as you bring up the topic, I'm immediately thinking of clients I've worked with and experience I've had with FMEAs and teaching or talking about using this tool, and just the look of dread on some engineers and managers' faces when they go, oh, you know, I hate FMEA. It takes so long. Do we have to? We already know what's going to go wrong. What's the point? I think it's because of the various mistakes that have been done, or have been done, saying it politically corrected, that we've committed over the years that leads to that taint on FMEAs.
It does. It's a real, if you look at FMEA like filling out a form, it can be a very long, slog.
Drudgerous, I was thinking.
Drudgerous, yeah, that was the word I tried to say. Drudgery. Yeah. However, if you keep focused on the objectives, keep the eye on where you're headed, and if you have decent facilitation skills, it can move along pretty well, and it can accomplish some incredibly powerful things if it's done right.
All right.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Yeah, just so many FMEAs do a wonderful job of identifying risk, but they don't move on then to improve the design. So the first mistake that I've identified with clients and people that I work with and students is let's use the FMEA, insights in the FMEA, to actually improve the designs. So the mistake would be to go through this exercise and not recommend specific design improvements. Yeah, that'd be on the product side. If you're doing a process FMEA, it'd be manufacturing improvements.
Right.
So that's an example.
Well, you know that, you know, some teams just putting a couple of engineers together with some quality or reliability or procurement folks will tend to, you know, raise these issues and people will go away and do stuff. It might not be documented, though. You know, I think the awareness helps, but it also may not be in the tracking system. It may not be prioritized. It may be all those things. Or,
exactly.
Or in the worst of cases, and I think you're alluding to, is that it's filling out the form and say, all right, we did that, check it off at the design review, and we're done.
Yeah, that would be the low end. But even still, like you say, we want to have the right form, and the right form includes recommended actions and actions taken.
Right.
So really, the up until that point, you know, that the we're identifying failure mechanisms and root causes, it's really an engineering analysis. But then once you've got the right failure modes and you've risk assessed, it becomes more like project management. So we're going to recommend solutions to reduce the risk. Mm-hmm. And some of those solutions should be improving the design. And so if we look in the recommendations column, we'll be able to see visibly, is the team improving the design through the use of the FMEA?
I wholeheartedly agree. One thing I've seen teams do is the FMEA document itself, using Excel or some other tool allows you to sort and do all these other things. But moving it over to the program that the project management team is using anyway to manage the project or the program. And I've seen it moved into defect tracking systems where it's becomes a task that has a relative high priority and needs attention and gets assignments and so on.
Absolutely.
And so building it into the process that the rest of the team is using anyway, I think helps bridge that gap to actually get those things implemented.
Completely agree. Whatever the company is using for project management, task execution, we want the FMEA to integrate, and it'll get done. It'll get executed.
Yeah. All right. So, I don't want to hold you back, but there must be another 100 different ways you can screw up an FMEA.
Well, what I've tried to do is identify the top 10.
Okay.
Just to keep it focused. And another one is we do a lot of work to identify tests.
Yeah.
But we don't always benefit, or the testing doesn't always benefit from the FMEA. So a secondary objective of FMEA, first and foremost, we want to improve designs. But also we want to improve the tests because we've got the failure modes and the causes. So we understand how things are going to fail. So we want to modify the tests if needed, upgrade them, if you will, so that the tests detect the specific failure modes and causes from the FMEA. Mm-hmm. And we do that based on, based on a risk assessment. In other words, we can look at the current tests that are being used and say, ask ourselves and ask the team, how good are those current tests at detecting the failure modes and causes that we're concerned about from the FMEA? And if they don't do a very good job or they don't do a great job, then one of the tasks in the recommendations column is to modify the test to be able to detect those particular problems. So that's another common mistake, which is not the test plan does not benefit or the test regimens or the test procedures don't benefit from the information in the FMEA. Mm-hmm. And then we turn that around into a quality objective, which is the design verification plan considers the failure modes from the design FMEA. And similarly on the process, FMEA considers the process control plan, considers the failure modes from the process FMEA.
Well, I find it that it's a tricky exercise doing that. But I think it's absolutely necessary, and I agree it's an important feature of FMEA is to increase awareness of what our testing is actually looking for.
Correct.
Right. Now, some of our testing is we should be willing to be surprised to find the unknown defects we hadn't seen otherwise. The FMEA is a good filter, though, to make sure that we're looking in the right places. I know when I first got involved with electronics, we were looking at a newfangled package, this was years ago, of a ball grid array. And one of the issue was is that you can't see the solder joint. without destroying the package. So it was, how do we detect cracks, for example?
Yeah.
And none of our testing was very good at finding cracks in ball grid arrays. And that was one of the uncertainties. It wasn't necessarily a failure mode that we were worried about. It was, but we just didn't know. So it fed forward into the testing program that we did a bunch of process qualification work, but we used a die penetrant to look for cracked solder joints or cold solder joints.
Great
as
example.
A way to do it. Yeah. But without the FMEA, we wouldn't have known to go look for that. We would have done the standard suite of tests that we've always done and probably mm-hmm. missed something if it was there.
I think the first time I became aware of this deficit years ago, I managed the body door system testing manager at Fisher Body. And so we would slam doors and run the windows up and down and do everything else, wiggle all the little buttons and stuff. And yet, and we would pass, back in the early 80s, we would pass virtually 100% mm-hmm. of all the tests. But we had terrible door warranty in the field. And so that, it's hit me, something's got to be wrong with these tests to, you know, month after month, be testing all the doors. We had the right sample sizes and all the rest of it. But we weren't finding the right things that actually the way customers used them or the way the doors were failing.
Right.
And so I began using the FMEAs that we did on doors to inform the tests and modify the tests so they'd find the real problems based on the designs that we were evaluating. And it did have a good impact on door warranty.
Well, I could have just sent you my kids that were using the doors as a swing all the time.
Exactly. That's right. So that's an example. Let me give you another example of a common mistake that's made. And that's on the subject of interfaces. Based on my experience at GM and then working with a lot of companies after that, over half the problems that companies run into or the products run into are at interfaces. And I, by that, I mean the physical interfaces or electrical or digital or hydraulic interfaces themselves contain a lot of problems. And FMEAs, particularly the way if they're done wrongly or the old school of just doing bottom up.
Mm-hmm. By component count,
yeah,
basically.
You miss tons of interfaces. And so I always like to start with a system FMEA and integration and a visual block diagram that shows the components and the interfaces between the components and subassemblies and the interfaces between the system and adjacent systems. Clearly show those and bring in each of those interfaces into the FMEA and analyze what kinds of failures can occur at the interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And thereby enhancing the value of the FMEA. So not including the interfaces properly in the FMEAs would be the mistake. And then the quality objective, of course, would be to have a good visual representation of the interfaces and then including that in the analysis itself.
Well, that really comes out with the scoping or boundaries of whatever it is, whatever the subject of the FMEA is I had one person one time says, well, we need to consider the cables, but they didn't want to consider the connectors.
Oh, yeah.
No, the connector belongs to the circuit board. We're doing just cables. Mm-hmm. I think the electronics guy is looking at it, well, that's mechanical. That's up to the solder joint or its connection into the circuit board. That's all the cable. Now, if we were soldering straight to the board, and getting rid of the connector altogether, that would eliminate, which is commonly a lot of problems in connectors. But yeah, whether it's a glue interface or a user interface, we used to call it the white space.
Yes.
You know, it's that it's not my part. You know, I have the component, you have the button, and that electromechanical area is oftentimes become that no man's land that
exactly.
nobody really owns.
And that's why I think it's a good practice to start with a system and start with the system FMEA and identify all those interfaces and integration areas, and then work down rather than merely working bottom-up component, which was the old-style FAMICA or FAMIA from years ago.
Well, what do you think of these databases that are out there that, you know, if you plug in your bill of materials, it'll give you the open, short, intermittent failure modes for a capacitor or any component, and populates page after page after page of an FMEA. Is that got any use?
I don't think it adds a lot of value personally. I think much of the value of the FMEA is the dialogue and synergy between the subject matter experts. So I don't mind having input, you know, from databases. But I want to have people look at the risk and talk about it and put their heads together of analyzing what the root causes are and coming up with, you know, thinking out of the box and creatively as to how we can fix those problems, anticipate and fix before you get into testing. So I'm a little bit skeptical on automated FMEAs and that type of thing. I want to have the subject matter experts, a really good team of subject matter experts, the right people, not too large, not too small. And I want the good deep dialogue about and discussion as to what the problems are and how we can solve them. Mm-hmm. You know, I might use that as input, but not beyond that.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So Let's see, we've got three down so far. Let's try get two more in today, and then we'll probably have to come back for another session.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I'll do one more here, and then we'll end off this session. One of the biggest lessons learned on FMEAs to me has been to miss the field history. There's a rich field history on virtually every product line. Even new technology has a certain amount of field history on portions of it.
Right.
And so I want the FMEA team to examine the field history. We'll call them potential failure modes. And unless they're sure they cannot occur, in other words, it's a complete redesign, if it's possible for those failure modes to occur, I want to bring those in as potential failure modes. And I want the FMEA team to be sure that the problems that have happened in the field will not recur within the design that's being evaluated.
Right.
So that field history, not considering the major lessons learned from warranty, recall campaigns, service, would be the mistake. And then the quality objective would be to consider the field history and make sure that those problems don't repeat within the current design being analyzed.
Well, there's a lot of what I see as legends and lore is, you know, the group you pull in together for the room are busy people to do the FMEA study, say at a system level. And they're cognizant of past issues and problems and but they're focused on creating a solution and moving forward. And asking them to consider in some tangible ways, go back and review records or do that, I think that's where we as reliability professionals can streamline that process, is
yes,
to filter these to the nuggets, the essential lessons learned, and make it very palatable to the team to, and one of the best processes that I've seen is where it was just basically a set of bullet points with clever marketing names, basically, is like ceramic capacitors are made of glass. And so is a reminder that they can break, and there's lots of ways you can break them.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But by triggering the thought process, just as you're going into an FMEA study, part of it is review what we know about the design, what's the documents, what's our requirements, all those things, but then have a summary of the history, like you're saying, of those lessons learned to just refresh the awareness, I think is a great way to help that. But asking a team to go off and spend a day studying history records and diving into root causes.
Oh, never do that. Yeah. Never do that.
It probably won't get done.
A lot of this can be done offline in preparation. Much of the work that creates the bad history of FMEAs, where they take so long, is because the proper preparation wasn't done. A lot of that work can be done outside the meeting of subject matter experts. And then when I bring them in, I mean, I might have a list of the, like you say, the condensed list of field failures, not every possible thing that's ever happened. But I'll hand out a pack of yellow stickies, and I'll ask the team to start with. I'll say, what are you most concerned about with this particular product? Mm-hmm. And just make up one yellow sticky for each concern you have. I don't care if it's a failure mode or a cause or an effect. Not really worried about FMEA language. Just tell me things you're concerned about. And it just creates this great interaction of energy to start the FMEA. And we'll get those up on the wall and make sure that by the time we're done with the FMEA, that each of those concerns are addressed.
Yep. Yep. Excellent step. Yep. All right.
Well there's first that's a good summary.
Yeah, good summary. 4 of 10 so far. So I guess we'll have to come back.
We'll have to come back. And thank you very much, Fred. That was a good good conversation. And I want to remind people that if you have questions, to please send them in to us through the Ascendo website. We're always open to doing that on this topic of FMEA or any of the other topics that we've had. So that wraps up another episode of Speaking of Reliability.
Great. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.